Welcome to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Dialing up the latest tactics and hottest trends, we're here to help you take your B2B game from stagnant to stellar.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Marianne, and together we're ready to answer your burning B2B sales and marketing questions.
Each episode, we'll tackle a need-to-know topic in the ever-evolving world of B2B sales and marketing. We'll break it down with actionable takeaways you can implement right away.
And because you don't get results without real talk, we're wrapping up every show with a quick Q&A segment. So fire away with your burning questions.
Whether you're a seasoned sales leader or a marketing veteran, the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline is your one-stop shop to take your B2B efforts to the next level.
Okay, hi Emily.
Hello, hello, hello.
I am glad to be kicking off another episode with you. And today we're going to be diving into adopting a new CRM, do's and don'ts, which is our little passion. We love CRMs. We love talking about them. We love training people on them. This is something that our agency has an expertise in. And really, we've led the charge on that. And we love that. So this is going to be a fun episode to kind of get into the nitty gritty on it.
Yes, I think that CRMs are, it's actually interesting. Earlier this morning, Marianne and I were talking. I'll steal your, I'll share what she shared with me, which I thought was interesting. It's a lot of people hear CRM and they feel overwhelmed. They think it's, you know, a very big, daunting thing, a CRM, a software.
Tool to use.
Like corporate crackdown CRM. And in reality, I mean, everybody, if you're in sales in any capacity, you are using a CRM. It just might not be a formalized CRM. You might have an Excel doc on your computer where you track all your deals and last time you reached out. You might have a note in your phone or a post-it where you're tracking this stuff. So you're already halfway there. And now...
What? Yeah. Should we back up? I might want to I'm going to read the definition that I usually read.
Okay. Great.
And everything. Cause I think this might help people on what a CRM really is. So a CRM is a system or strategy used by businesses to organize and analyze customer data, interactions, and behaviors across touch points and with the goal of improving customer service, retention, sales growth, by fostering their relationships with their clients. So I'm going to back up one more time and just remind and point out when I gave that definition, it started with a system or a strategy. So what you're pointing out are systems and strategies, post-it notes, cell phone notes, your cell phone list of contacts. I mean, I think a lot of salespeople use that as a CRM, just typing things into their contacts in their cell phone when they go meet people at a trade show and they put them all on their phone and that's where they keep the information. So The definition is a strategy or a system. And, the do's and don'ts that we're going to mostly talk about today and where we most recommend from at Lead G2 using a HubSpot as your CRM.
Right.
We've investigated a lot of them and we see a lot of pros and cons for using different strategies and formulas and platforms, but HubSpot is a really user-friendly interface and has a lot of pros. So that's the one that we onboard people to. Yes. But yeah, you're exactly right, Emily. People use CRMs, even if they are not tech savvy or, have a contract with a platform for it. You're still using.
Yep. We've heard all the excuses. Even if you're not using a formalized CRM, you do have some kind of system or strategy or else you're really not able to do the sales job that you're doing. It's you need that. So you're doing it now, formalizing it. So I just wanted to share that little tidbit that Marianne and I were just talking about this morning.
I don't actually think our target audience are the type of people using Rolodexes. I bet not a lot of people listening to this podcast, you still use a Rolodex or ever have used a Rolodex, but that used to be the CRM for people back in the day.
Absolutely. Write your little note of what happened and put it back in the Rolodex.
Right.
Okay. So I think the goal of today is to talk through CRM do's and don'ts. And Marianne and I have come with our ideas and hopefully this will be actionable enough that you can end the podcast today and go take some, real life action on some of the things we talk about.
Yeah, totally. Should we start with the do's, the positives?
Let's do it. Let's start with those positives. You're going to kick us off with one?
okay. I would say, well, before you even are setting up a CRM, choosing what CRM to use, right? Mm-hmm. Like evaluate your options. What fits your business needs? What fits the size of your company? What fits your pricing and features that you need for choosing a CRM to commit to? It's not something you want to change a lot. So it shouldn't be an impulse buy or a buy that you just find somebody presents a proposal to you and you go with it. Like you really should evaluate all of your options, compare. And we help people do this. I know that we have several clients who use Salesforce and then it integrates to HubSpot to use HubSpot for other things. But there are a lot of companies that have specific needs that one CRM over another could help. So there's a lot of value in taking free trials or demos of many different platforms to evaluate what's going to fit you best before you commit to it.
Yeah, totally. So CRM do, evaluate, make sure you're choosing the right CRM. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll throw another one out. So I think it can be easy when getting a new CRM to just like wing it almost, like just set up everything you possibly can set up and just hope for the best. But I would say CRM do, if you're at the beginning of the CRM setup process, you'll obviously either work with an agency who will guide you through this, like lead you to, or really think through your business goals. Think through your objectives. Think through why you got a CRM in the first place and what you want to expect sellers to be doing, and like set it up in a way that's cohesive with that, right? Like you want the create form when someone goes to create a contact or the deal to have the actual properties that you want someone to be entering that you need for marketing perhaps, or maybe you need it for your business budget for next year. You know, think through those goals and what you need so you can track the right information in your CRM and not just have it end up being like the equivalent of a post-it note, right? Like you want to up level your CRM capabilities with a CRM.
Yeah. It's like, it always goes back to the original goals or like the values, like, you know, just like other decision-making things. Mm-hmm. It's, you want to go back to, does this still fit at our company? We have core values. Does this fit into our core values? Does this fit into our goals of our CRM? Mm-hmm. Because you can get carried away quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I would say another do is to make sure that you're involving multiple departments. And I think that's something that working with an agency really helps with, because if you're in charge of setting up the CRM, it's going to be very tempting to set it up only for how you are going to use it and what's most beneficial to you. But mm-hmm. Ideally, a CRM, you're going to have sales input, you're going to have customer services input, you're going to have marketing's input, you know, relevant department input into what they need from the CRM, what they need to see, what they're able to put in, what, you know, data in, data out, what information they're going to be able to put in and what information they want to see out. So making sure that you get buy-in from everyone who's going to be using it and can set it up in a way that's going to be helpful to everyone who's using.
Yeah.
So make sure to foster that collaboration and don't just dive in just for you.
Yeah. What's that saying? Don't be a focus group of one, you know, make sure you're making sure everyone at the company is going to be happy with it. Okay. I'll throw out another one. When you're moving to a new CRM, you're going to have information from past CRMs potentially that you want to bring into HubSpot. And I would say prioritizing the migration of that data, but also the cleanup of it. When you move all of that, you know, record information, maybe do a little cleanup and thinking about, you know, go back to those business goals. Why are they in our CRM? Are they a useful fit for our business? Have they talked to us in the last, you know, maybe make a date 5 years or more, we don't put them in. And that way you're setting up your CRM in a way that it's the best, most clean version it's ever been, versus just dumping trash from one CRM.
And that can slow down the process, which I feel like people don't want to do when they're excited to get a new CRM, but it is so worth it. Clean mm-hmm. before it goes in. So yep. True, Emily. Okay. A do that I think everyone probably expects is training. And I will tell you that we have made this mistake, not including ongoing training as needed, right? I mean, it is something that has to happen regularly and done well. This is really important. And why I think people think they need to hire an agency. Before all those other dues that we went through, people think, oh, we do need somebody to train us. You do. Training is so important. Making sure everyone understands not only why they're using a CRM, but how. What are the CRM usage guidelines for each department? What is expected of them? And how can they use it? So making sure that you have a real, true training plan. Again, goals for that training and different types of training method, right? You can't just knock this out in a day. You probably need videos and a live session. You probably need multiple workshops. You probably need some one-on-ones and working with an agency to map out what's going to work for your organization for that ongoing support and who people can go to with questions is really important.
Yeah. Ongoing support is so important. And you think too, like, you might train everyone you have currently on staff, but then what happens when you hire someone? Oh, like, how do you get them in HubSpot?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there is that level of HubSpot's easy and intuitive, but it's a huge tool with a lot of, you know, tools inside of the big tool, and it can feel overwhelming to people, and everyone learns a little bit differently, but we've worked with lots of people who feel overwhelmed and instantly shut down and don't want to use it. And, you know, having that, yeah, you know, giving it at the ground floor and helping build up is definitely a do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The last do I've come to the table with is review and adjust. So, you know, once you get in there, you start training, your team is in there, you know, don't just feel comfortable with the setup that you had originally set up. If you're finding that come end of the year or come, you know, middle of the year, maybe you're planning some campaigns and you need information from the CRM that you don't have, you know, add a new property, adjust, build a new report, you know, think through and adjust constantly, because business needs change, your products and services might change. Mm-hmm. And certainly like leadership or, you know, goals might change over time. So I think that that's the biggest thing we see with like data cleanliness and data hygiene is that it just sits for so long and people become comfortable with what they know to do. And so it just becomes unorderly really quickly.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. I love it.
Okay. Let's talk about some don'ts.
Don'ts. Don't do the opposite of all the do's. I'm just kidding. I would say don'ts is don't underestimate implementation for this. This is not something that can be done in a month. This is something that you do need to allocate sufficient time, resources for an implementation. It's a big transition, moving your CRM or starting a CRM and getting it set up. So think through the pitfalls of what could go wrong with this. Think through the timeline of reality because it's likely not the only project you're working on. So just don't underestimate the complexity, I guess, of getting this going would be fair warning for my don't.
Yeah. I mean, getting it going, teaching everyone how to use it, everyone has meetings and everyone's booked and busy. So making sure that you, allocate enough time and resources to it. I'd say another don't is don't neglect all of the resources within HubSpot for helping you with data quality. So once you get moving in HubSpot, there is so many data quality alerts that happen. So like HubSpot will alert you of duplicate contacts or duplicate companies or alert you if a workflow or a sequence is, you know, not triggering correctly or, you know, if you have an integration with like, let's say Salesforce, you might get some alerts in that connected app that say, you know, integration failure alert and tell you why. Like there's lots of different alerts that happen. And I think it can be easy to ignore because like, you're just like, I don't want to see it. But yeah. I think over, you know, extended periods of time, it gets that contributes directly to data quality. So, I would say that's a big one is plan time every month to go through and clean up those alerts and make sure that, you're not duplicating, objects or records or any of that.
Yeah. I think that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another don't, I would say don't overcomplicate things. Like thinking about workflows, I think this is just the example I'm going to give for this. You don't it doesn't make it a more effective workflow to have five different branches and, you know, 16 different steps. That doesn't make it a better workflow. So I just want to like compare that to this, right? It does not have to be overcomplicated. You do not have to have six required fields for every stage of your pipeline. You do not have to have automation that changes lifecycle stages at every stage of your pipeline. Don't overcomplicate it. Just set it up for fitting your basic needs and then add complication as you continue to grow with it and as needs pop up. Mm-hmm. It's not a set it up, set it and forget it thing. So there is a HubSpot allows for a lot of complexity and you don't have to choose overly complicated features when you're setting up a CRM.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And actually my next don't is helps with this. So the next don't is don't ignore user feedback. I think that it's easy to overcomplicate and spend a lot of time in the beginning and not actually take into account like all like the actual like user's end experience, the end user. And so I would say, you know, take Marianne's advice, don't overcomplicate on the front end. Do think through your business results and what you need to set up to have the best functioning CRM in the beginning. And then don't forget to take into account user feedback. So maybe set up some, you know, forms or, you know, a quick survey for people or set some time one-on-one to meet with sales and sales managers to just ask them, how is your experience? What are you realizing? Is there anything in here that isn't functioning well or that should be added that isn't? Because odds are, I mean, sales is the ones who use the last CRM. They're the ones who are in there adding deals, adding companies, adding contacts. They might have opinions that you could then use to essentially overcomplicate things later, you know? But yeah, at the beginning stages, keeping it simple and then using user feedback is, I think, the best
course. I love that. And honestly, it just kind of reminded me of another do. So let me just, can I go back and add a do?
Add a do.
I would say another do is having a, you know, I think of sales, you mentioned the sales managers just then, and I think of them as all needing to be champions of a CRM, but I also think that not necessarily sales managers should be the one getting the feedback. There really needs to be somebody that owns the project, who can troubleshoot, who can, and I'm thinking of a client example that we work with, Emily, who they have someone who is directly handling all of the questions about it and can be the champion's not the right word. It's like manager of the CRM.
Internal. Yeah. Like
one person, one person being in charge of that. Right. And then feedback from other people and input on how they want to use it is important, and champions of it who are encouraging it, but really having a point person for your CRM is important when you're working in a big organization and trying to implement something like this.
Yeah. I love that too. And because you shared a do, I'll share the last don't.
For okay.
So don't expect immediate results. And I think that this is extremely important because as the project leader, as the leadership of a company, you invest a lot of time and money into a CRM and you expect immediate results. You're expecting to see every report ever built right away. You're expecting to see all of your, you know, everything populating and all of your salespeople adopting it. And I think that just taking a step back and understanding that it really does require a consistent effort. It requires time and training. It requires people to get comfortable with the very basics in order to move to kind of like the next tier of tools and leveling up their usage.
It's like infiltrated with the culture almost. It's not just like the tool that you're using. It's really getting it like infiltrated with how your company and your people operate and talk and using the right words to talk about their CRM and their habits. It is
habits for sure. Yeah. And I mean, habits take time to build. So, you know, one thing I've personally noticed, I know Marianne's probably, she could probably say the exact same thing, but you know, making sure that leadership is building this into their everyday routines. So, you know, I have a couple examples I'll share. Like one would be if they have a one-on-one or, you know, a conversation between a manager and a seller and they're talking about, you know, deals and what's going on, where historically they might just say like, what deals do you have? And the seller would be like, I have these, and these, and just like talk through them. Actually have the manager pull up the deals pipeline, talk through it in terms of, okay, this proposal's been here. You know, this proposal was presented a week ago. It hasn't moved. What's going on? How can I support you through that? Like really having conversations around items in the CRM. Another example that I give all the time is take conversations that you would have outside of the CRM and bring them in the CRM. So instead of shooting someone on your team a quick Teams message and saying like, hey, whatever happened with that deal or whatever happened with that person you told me about, like write it in a note in the CRM. So like go to that person's contact record, at tag whoever on your team you want to talk about it with, and just say it in there, because that's how you get people into the CRM and using it and feeling comfortable. Because I will say, I do think that where this falls apart is people don't think that other people on their team are looking in the CRM as much as they are. So they're like, I would rather just Teams Messenger shoot a quick email. Where if you're having live active conversations within the CRM, people are going to feel more comfortable and confident doing that in the future.
That's a good tip.
So don't expect immediate results. Practice makes perfect. I think all of this kind of comes into this together, but yeah, just it's takes time and
And you don't do this all the time, right? When you implement a CRM, you're hoping it's for the long haul. So lean on an agency, lean on a partner, lean on someone who's done this before that can help, you know, see where you would be blindsided, right? It is, you know, I know that it leads you to, at least we make things a lot more efficient and effective for our clients implementing a CRM. So, lean on expertise for this and, don't try to go at it on your own.
Cause if you do go at it on your own, you have to have the resources internally to do all of this on their own. So you have to have someone dedicated to this. So it's a good point. Like lean on an agency or have someone internally who is prepared to spend a significant amount of time doing this.
Okay, should we dive into our Q&A?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, I'll do question number one here. So it says, I feel like the B2B market is so crowded with so many competitors in my category alone. And a lot of the time, it feels like we're all saying the same thing with our own content getting lost in the shuffle, no matter how much we shake things up. What would you recommend for differentiating from the competition?
Oh, that's a fun question.
I like that question.
Okay, the first thing that comes to mind, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of different routes we could take with this, but the first thing that comes to my mind is thought leadership from you as a human. So I think, you know, a trend that we're seeing is people really getting away from brand being the communicator of things, emails from brands, social media posts from a brand, but shake things up by sharing that content with a personality behind it, with leaders at the company. It doesn't have to be just sales, with all leaders at the company. The more humans that represent your brand and share content can get through to shake things up a little bit more than just hearing things from a brand. That's the first thing.
I love that. No, I mean, I think that's spot on. And I think it can feel sometimes like everyone in your space is saying the same thing. You're all doing the same thing. I would encourage you though to like stay the course. The reason being because like I'm saying stay the course in the sense like don't stop creating content because you feel like your competition is creating the same content. Mm-hmm. Like I would say it would almost be better to be creating content and your competition's also creating content, then your competition being the only one creating the content and you're just like not in the, you know what I mean? I would say think about ways that you can take content and remix it in other ways, create maybe a series of blogs or a podcast or create some webinars where people can sign up and attend, but continue putting out the content. And I do think that you would be better served doing that. And maybe like Marianne said, having it come from you versus the brand or, you know, whatever that might look like, than to just, not create content because it's getting lost. Like I would say continue creating.
And I will say I don't want to say instead of the brand. I would say as a human and the brand, you know, don't eliminate something, add to it. And then I would also suggest maybe trying ABM, doing something that's very niche focused, or doing some content that is, yeah, just more focused. ABM could be a way to do that, but also, you know, in your buyer's journey with different target personas, really zooming in on one place of that buyer's journey with that target persona and creating something really specific for them. So if you're creating a lot of broad content, I would just try to recommend zooming in a bit.
Yeah, I actually love that. It made me think of something I'll mention. Like, you know, if you're feeling like the content you're creating is not being seen because it's the same as everything else you're seeing, you could spend the time and energy you're using to create that content and to create some sequences that sales could send, like one-to-one emails that incorporate the content that you're creating, but could be a different avenue in, because it comes off as more personalized, like that one-to-one touch point instead of like mass promotion of.
So it's kind of interesting, Emily, because like our answer to this sounds like it's been not about the content itself, but how you're promoting it. Because yeah, you and your competitors probably are creating the same content because you're competing and are answering the same questions of your target persona in their buying process. But how are you reaching it to people?
Yeah.
How are you promoting it? So it's more of a question of promotion than content. That's the answer, right?
That is
about it as promotion, not content.
And take a step back and remember that you're in it. Like, you're living and breathing this every single day. You follow your competition. You're seeing all this everywhere. The prospect you have in mind probably doesn't. Like, they're probably not following you and all 100 of your other competitors and seeing all of this. Like, they might not have that same view of the content. So,
love it. Okay. Next question. It's refreshing to see the focus on genuine content over algorithm manipulation. What strategies do you think would work best for connecting with your audience in B2B? That's a big question.
I'm trying to interpret this question. So I think if I'm understanding correctly, what they're talking about is so genuine content. So content that is actually thought leadership, actually worth people's while to read, instead of just creating content to get to the top of the algorithm, the top of SEO rankings, the top of Google. So using like authenticity over like just manipulating Google.
And in a world of AI.
Yeah.
Content creation.
Right. So, I mean, Marianne and I always say write content for humans and not robots. I think that that remains true in this scenario as well. And I actually feel like this kind of ties into the last question as well a little bit too, because you're creating content for people to read, right? Like, the goal is for them to read and learn and understand. And if you're creating content just for Google to push it up to the top of their rankings, or just for, you know, LinkedIn to see it or whatever, you're not creating content that's authentic to your buyer, and it's not something that's going to add value to them.
Also, you're not going to win that way. Yeah, you might be really smart, but you're not smarter than Google. They will figure you out. Like, they change your algorithms all the time. You can't write to that.
Right. And so, I mean, I would say what strategies do you think work best for connecting with your audience? I would say one-to-one sales outreach, having content that you're sending out in sales emails as well as marketing, because that doesn't depend on an algorithm or, you know, rankings of any kind. You're promoting that yourself. And then I would also say, you know, really think about what you're writing and the intention behind it, because at the end of the day, the goal of content, like if you zoom out and you just look at content, like, why are we all writing content? What's the point about it? The whole point is to educate and inform people. And so I would say, like, the biggest strategy would be think about everything you share, anything you post, anything you create, and determine, like, am I actually teaching people? Like, am I sharing knowledge worth reading. And I think that that is the strategy.
Mm-hmm. And also, since the question was specific for B2B, and that's really our expertise, bringing personality to it. I think B2C is easier to connect with your audience than it is B2B. So bring your personality, bring your brand's personality, bring your personality. It doesn't have to be stiff all the time. So
I love that. It's so true. Yeah. B2C, you see all the creative kind of like consumer outreach. You're talking directly to them. You're using like fun words. And a lot of times B2B can feel a little businessy.
Stiff.
Duffy. Yeah. So yeah, you know, use your creativity and thinking and use that kind of B2C mindset and some of your B2B outreach and yeah, authentic self.
I love it. Okay. Those were our questions for today. Thank you so much for listening and please feel free to connect with each of us. You can find our contact information in the show notes. And then also in the show notes, send us questions. We love questions like this and we love to answer them on the show. So record a voicemail, shoot us a text or send an email. All three of those options are available in our show notes. So if you have a question, we're going to do our best to answer it. And we look forward to seeing everyone on the next episode.
Yay. Thanks for listening. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Don't forget to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And if you've got a question for us, head to the show notes and let us know what's on your mind.
And visit our website, leadg2.com, where you can find even more helpful B2B sales and marketing resources.